Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Welcome to another episode of Crazy Sexy Midlife Love Radio. I am Morgana, and I'm here with my husband.
I'm here too.
Yeah. We are getting married 100 times in 100 countries. We've been married 25 times in the last 7 years. 2020, not so much. We'll make up for that as things open up.
Yeah, it's been a dry spell.
Yeah.
For sure.
We have a lot of catching up to do.
Absolutely.
We invite you to check out a really cute, I think, 3-minute video of our first 11 weddings at crazysexymidlifelove.com. And while you're there, join our Crazy Sexy Midlife Love family and download Devin's ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Every Marriage-Minded Woman Needs to Know.
They should, because women are really way more smarter than we are. Well, and I say that with a song in my heart.
Well, and that brings up an interesting point, because right before we went live, when I said that I would massage your sore foot because I love you,
right?
You said, I know. And I said, well, how do you know that I love you? And you said, because I tell you a lot, but I don't show you. So,
because I was working you. That's that's what was taking place just then.
Oh.
You're aware of that now, right? You get that I was just.
So
I think I ruined where you were going, but there we go.
So yes. You're saying that I do show you that I love you.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, if you feel the need to show me more often, I'm fine with that.
Well, how do you like to be shown that you're loved?
You know, a whole variety of ways.
Such as?
I don't know. Because all of the cooking you do, all the food you make.
I make none.
None. Not a spoonful of anything.
Well, I tried.
I think once, you did. I know. I do remember that.
So 9 pouring, years ago.
Pouring water in a pan and shuffling a piece of chicken around was very confusing.
No, that's unlikely. That's over my pay grade.
Were you making a piece of watermelon? Is that it?
Yeah, and you laughed at me.
Right.
So
that's true.
You taught me, and besides, you're such a good cook. I married you for your cooking.
I know.
So, okay.
So we're going to be talking about things today.
Yeah. We're going to be talking today about parents. Some of you had great parents, some of you not so much. I should have written down the phone number for the show.
That's
Doug,
all right.
Yeah. Doug, if you could type it in the chat, because I keep forgetting. Just to invite, if any of you have a parent story, we want to hear it. Devin and I come from the Challenging Parent Club. And, you know, our parents are our first imprint of love and how lovable we are and what we look for in partners or try to avoid in partners. I think the joke in the family is that Devin ended up marrying his mom anyway. surprise. And, you know, for a lot of us, those painful experiences really formed what we thought about ourselves. And that shows up in our relationship patterns. And we've been hearing from you for a few weeks about your fears going into love, your challenges, your dread of working on yourself more and getting hurt again and all that kind of stuff, which, believe me, you know, I could have written a book about. I think Devin is writing a book about right now. I met Devin when I was 45 and had a perfect record of romantic failure. Devin is the exception. So we're talking about parents. And by the way, if you want to call in at any time and share your parent story or ask for help, or maybe you have an insight, if you just want to call in, you can call 888-627-6008.
So we're live.
Yes, we are live.
That's very exciting.
Surprise!
Yes. Oh, and we should say that we were running a couple minutes late because I guess they're having rolling blackouts in our state.
Well, it's raining in California, and we are not
so
prepared
everything.
For that.
It's like
yeah.
Now we have to go throw virgins in a volcano to fix it, I'm sure.
No, we love the rain. There's like nowhere, where else do you hear, oh my God, it's raining, how wonderful. Like, I love it when it rains because I'm from California. It's a special occasion, but everything falls apart. So we're really excited and grateful for the rain. And our radio station is like on its backup generators and everybody's on their exercise machines generating the electricity to push out this radio show right now.
Right. So we consider ourselves lucky in the rain. It's drizzle, really. It's not even rain. If you were to go anywhere else and say what we have is rain, they would laugh at us.
Well, we're in Southern California. I heard it's hailing in San Francisco.
All right, that's still not all that impressive. It's going to be like flakes to anybody else.
Yeah,
no question.
This is true. It's like a light mist. But I'll tell you, the plants are really happy. I wish somebody had told me that plants like water. Like I got drought tolerant plants and thought they'd be happy.
This
right?
is what you learned.
Here's
in,
a drought.
In cooking school. Oh, plants like water. So
oh, mind blown. Right. Okay. So what I was thinking about was Devin's and my first trip. Like part of why we traveled the world getting married, which was Devin's idea completely. Like I was 47 and happy to elope with no guests, no church, no dress, nothing. And just check that off my list. Married. Yay. Bucket list complete. And, you know, as kind of a very happy surprise, Devin came up with the idea that we continue to get married and get married in 100 countries, 100 times. And just every time we travel, we get married. And sometimes it's big and elaborate. And sometimes it's kind of like, hey, you, lady behind the desk, can you read this for us? And it's really what I've gotten out of it is it's really the vows and it's the relationship and it's the marriage. Is pomp and circumstance and costumes and castles wonderful and romantic? Yes. And it's really the marriage. That's the prize. Getting to go home with the person you love more than anybody else in the world is what it's really about. So before we got married, we went on our first trip together. And other boyfriends might suggest Paris or Rome or Greece for a first romantic trip together. My husband invited me to Armenia, Georgia, and Azerbaijan. And I'm a girl who says yes. When Devin says, hey, you want to do this? I say, yeah, let's go. Whatever it is. I'm game.
Yeah, no, I will say you are game.
Yeah.
Because I think I said Azerbaijan, and you're like, what?
Azerbaijan what?
Hi. So, but you
I've never heard of it.
You know, we showed up, and it was good, and it was romantic.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. Amazing. I'm the biggest fan and advocate of that trip. Armenia.
Oh, right.
Romantic.
I'm buddies with the guy who's that tour operator. Maybe we'll bring him on and we'll like give you guys a special inside look. I'll create a video and we'll have an inside look of that. But I know we're not talking about that today, but I'm itching. I just need to say this. I'm itching to talk about travel and I'm itching to travel. So we're going to have to figure this out, this whole pandemic thing, because I'm getting so close.
I think we'll both be vaccinated within the next 2 months is what it looks like. You know, that's the value of being a little on the older side.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, hypochondria was not listed under the the conditions that let me jump ahead in line.
Right. No, that turned out to be a fail.
Yeah, my friends with asthma have a leg up on me there. So this was our first trip. Incredibly exotic and amazing and romantic, and all these like places in the Bible are showing up in real life, because to me it was like they might as well have been locations in Narnia when they're just in a book. But when I'm looking at the actual mountain, what was the mountain in that we saw in Armenia?
You know, you're asking the wrong guy, but yeah, no, there's an incredible mountain that is, if you are standing in Armenia,
because it's in the Bible, but I just can't remember the name.
Right, it's a famous castle, and there's a mountain in the background. The mountain's actually in Turkey, but you have to be standing to get this iconic photo of basically this perfectly situated, unbelievable castle.
And this is the oldest with Christian church in all of Europe.
Right. And so there is a mountain behind it. And it's like, it's just a perfect pairing. And I have that picture. And had I known we were going to get into it, I would have sent our producer the picture and he could have thrown this on the screen.
We'll put it in the show notes.
So, it's pretty amazing.
So Armenia is where Christianity first took root in Europe. It has the oldest church. And then Georgia, not the state, but the country, Georgia, is where wine was first produced. And they still make wine in a drastically different way than everybody else. So it's really cool. And everything is organic in Armenia and Georgia, because they haven't had the money for, you know, all the GMO stuff coming in. So wine lovers go to Georgia for their unique ancient wine production, and the food everywhere is amazing. And then you go to Azerbaijan, and there is this little mountain on fire, and this fire has been burning nonstop for thousands of years. Alexander the Great was standing in front of the same fire that we were standing in front of. Again, mind blown. And Baku, their capital city, is one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen in my life. And you're seeing these crazy, like neo-modern, wavy, curly, bizarre modern buildings. And you're also looking at buildings that are thousands of years old, kind of in the same line of sight. It's wild. But the day of the burning fire that had been burning for thousands of years, I received an email from my father. And I'm daddy's girl. You know, I'm his only kid, and he's been my only parent since I was 14. And he's a lawyer, so I was talking like a lawyer since I was maybe 5. Just daddy's girl. And I got an email from him that morning in Azerbaijan that was really out of character. He was writing to tell me that he was getting married to his girlfriend. All of her children were going to be at the wedding. And since I had, according to my father, not told him when I was returning, I was not invited to the wedding. And just like remembering that is really hurtful, because that's not what our relationship was like. Our relationship had always been really, really warm. And to hear that he was getting married and that I was specifically the only person really not welcome and not invited shocked me. And I had already been rejected by my mother and my stepfather, flat out disowned. I graduated from high school with honors and a National Merit Scholar, and they didn't show up. So dad has been everything for a very, very long time. And then to be rejected by him was just like, you know, the final straw. It was just too much. And we were in this glorious skyscraper hotel for our tour on, like, I can't remember if it was the 17th or the 27th floor, but we were really high up, and I wanted to jump out. I really, really wanted to jump out. That was a moment where it was really good that I was not alone, because I felt so alone. And I shared this with Devin, feeling like, you know, the biggest abandoned child in the world, thinking that he just wouldn't understand because he's close with his mother. And it was a pivotal moment in our relationship because Devin did understand. Because he had his own like parental abandonment story too, that he spent decades writing his book about, his first book. And so it was a moment where like our wounds brought us closer together because he had the understanding and the compassion and had done the work on himself to be a great relationship partner and be there for me. And so we did go out on that tour and we did stand in front of that burning fire. And there's a photo of me with like my tear puffy eyes and no makeup with Devin. And it was a beautiful, like glad to be alive moment. And that is thanks to Devin for kind of rescuing me by being there and understanding in that moment. And not everybody could. I feel like I picked the one person in the world who got it and knew how to comfort me in that moment. You remember that day, I'm sure.
Not all that well, if I'm honest. So,
all okay, right. You just lost points.
I know I did.
Yeah.
But okay, so here's the thing. I look at it in a much more broad spectrum thing. Like I remember the trip, absolutely. And I do remember when that thing happened. I don't remember precisely what I did, but I know in general what I did. My job is to show up. My job is to kind of support you however it is that you needed to be supported. And I mean, I think that's sort of like the general policy of if you pick somebody to be with and you can't find compassion in your heart for where they're at any moment in time, then you have to probably reconsider A, that you may not be with the right partner, or B, you may not be prepared to be in a place where you need to be in a partnership. I mean, I know people who are dating, you know, they're 50 years old and they're dating. They've never been married. They're not really looking to get married. They're like, dating is fine. You know what I mean? They're going to hang around for a while. Maybe they'll, you know what I mean? Maybe they'll date for a few years, but really, you know, maybe they're going to move. Who knows? There's a million things that happen in our lives. So I think really what was happening in that moment is that you needed my attention and you needed to know that you weren't alone, and which you weren't. And it was at some point going to be okay. Like there, I think there was too many pieces. I mean, there's a much bigger part to the story that you haven't shared. But I think.
What am I missing?
Well, what happened to your father?
That's right.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. And that's an important piece. There was something fishy because that's what I remember us talking about is like you were describing your father as having a great relationship with him. And so there sounded like there was something not quite right about the letter or any of it.
Thank you for reminding me because I was planning on sharing that and I forgot because I was getting all, what is the term for a clump?
That's
for
right.
Clumped? I don't remember. What I didn't know at the time that came out maybe a year later. First of all, my stepmother, my now stepmother, was wonderful and kind of shocked because that isn't my dad and that isn't how he feels about me. It turns out that I think it was maybe a year later that my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So it actually wasn't even my dad who was writing that letter. It was the disease because I had the letter, the email that I sent to him telling him when we were going on the trip and when we were arriving back. And so that he didn't remember and just the tone of that letter wasn't dad. So in retrospect, I don't take it personally. At that moment, I did because I didn't have all the information. I just had like a very painful letter. But in retrospect, it's like it was an early sign of the disease. And the disease is not my dad. And there's a lot that came out, like nothing really horrible, just, you know, a few kind of unflattering things that I learned about my dad. But by the time I found that out, that person really didn't exist anymore because the disease was taking parts of him away. And the sweet thing about that disease, and this isn't going to be the Alzheimer's show in a minute, is that it did strip away like so many of his regrets and so much of his shame and frustration with life, and just left a very pure, loving soul, which was actually a really beautiful connection for his final few years, until the last time I saw him, when it was really obvious to me that his body was doing him no favors. And I knew that it was time for him to go. And I told him that was okay. And I have felt his presence nearby a lot, especially over the last year. But one of the points I wanted to make, and thank you for reminding me of the disease part, the Alzheimer's, is whether somebody has Alzheimer's or they are just traumatized or damaged people or distracted or reacting to something else or whatever happened. Because especially in my line of work as a coach, I've encountered really, really dramatic, like, horror stories, from clients. I witness a lot. But the big thing is that it's not personal. And that's a really weird thing to say, because what could feel more personal than how your parents treat you and whether your parents love you or not? And I think the most useful thing that I would want anybody listening or watching to take away is that any hurt or abuse or rejection that you got from your parents wasn't about you. You were lovable. Are there things that maybe your parents had trouble with or didn't like, or things that you did that may have created some chaos? Maybe, maybe not. I have no idea. But who you are fundamentally, that is a, you are inherently lovable, and parents have their own craziness and their own path. And it's not an equal partnership. It's not like marriage where we choose each other and we're peers. You don't choose your parent when you're a child. And I had a mother who's a drug addict and has some other issues, who would tell me that, would berate me for doing less for her than she did for me, which it took me until I was 42 to really get, how weird is that? How weird is it to tell your child that your child is supposed to do as much for you as you do for her? That's not the arrangement when you're the adult and the parent, and the child is kind of dependent on you and just figuring out how to get through school and grow up and, you know, become a person. So the rejections hurt. I have friends and clients who have been really abused. That hurts. It's not a reflection of you. It's a reflection of that person. It's not personal. Don't take it personally. You are separate from what was done to you by parents. And just knowing that, I think, helps free you up to choose who's going to be your family. And on the other side of that, I choose Devin. I have a bunch of really happy, healthy mother figures in my life now. My mother's sister, who's my aunt, my stepmother, my father's wife. I have a great relationship with my father's past now, but my stepmother and I got really, really close during his decline and passing. And Devin's mom, my mother-in-law, like I've gone from the girl without any mother to like a cornucopia of moms. And you have to like address, I think, your lovability separate from your parents in order to feel worthy enough to choose somebody and attract somebody who is really loving and healthy. And that was the big work and journey that I did on myself. And when I say work on yourself, I also am really passionate about the idea that there's nothing wrong with you. You may have some really like unhelpful patterns and maybe some really unhelpful beliefs, but your patterns and your beliefs aren't you. You could still exist without those patterns and without those beliefs and maybe be a lot healthier. So you are not broken. You are not bad. You are not wrong. You are not less than good enough. You just may be carrying some stuff like, you know, like one of those big Pillsbury suits, you know, that are creating the distance between you and the love that you know in your heart you yearn for, and that your real self, your best self, your truest self really, really deserves. And your person is out there looking for you. And that's my stump speech. Devin?
What to add? So I do have a couple things to add. You know, I tend to not see things. I mean, the joy of being in a relationship is recognizing we don't have to be the same person with the same understanding. I don't think it's personal. I think that's like a big one. And I think the question, because I think it's when something appears to be done to you, it feels malicious. It feels mean-spirited. It feels all of these things, right? And I think as a country, that's what we're sort of dealing with right now. I think one of the things that gets me out of a lot of it is sort of like, well, what's the context, right? You were like my father. So it would be easier, and I'm not giving him a pass on this. I'm just saying that part of the context is this was part of who he was. And if I don't take out the context, it allows me to sit and wallow and sort of like, oh, he did these things and he's so terrible. And it doesn't serve me to kind of be that person. So a lot of it is like when I think about my father, and don't get me wrong, I was angry, I did all those kinds of things, but a lot of it is just sort of the context of how was he raised and how did he live his life? You know, he was one of 13 children, three sets of twins in a row, like in 4 years, like six kids in 4 years. And of the group of that, of the six, he was the oldest of the six. And he was sort of like, you know, absolutely a middle kid of like this larger brood of people. And so there's always somebody in diapers, and they were poor, and they were on the south side of Chicago. And so they were really poor. And I think he grew up sort of like, you do whatever it is that you can in order to get by, and that's what it is, and life is hard. And so, you know, and so with that said, how much finger pointing do I need to do in order to say, oh, he did these things that sucked, right? So I don't look at it in the terms of, you know, I think the context again, like where did he come from? How did he live his life? What did he do? What did he think? Like most of his behavior was just sort of indicative of his behavior, of behavior that he did to kind of everybody. And I just happen to be the son, so I received a larger portion than most people. Is that a terrible thing? I don't know. Maybe to some degree. I mean, I think when I think about what did I learn from my father? A lot of it was, and I've talked about this many, many times, like my part of my elevator pitch in talking about my book and presenting it was, my father was a liar, a thief, and a con man. And for the first 25 years, I tried to be just like him, nailed it. And then, of course, for the next 30 years, I'm sort of learning that really his biggest benefit to me was that he gave me the blueprint of precisely what it is that I didn't want to be. That doesn't make him bad. And, you know, where it was like where Morgana was saying a minute ago, that everybody's sort of perfect and whole and complete. And I believe that. And when I think about humanity and I think about people, I really think we're sort of like all sick children of God. Like we're all striving to learn, grow, become, all the kind of stuff. But in order to learn, grow, and become, we need obstacles. So who are the obstacles? It's not always parents, but it's frequently parents. To a great many people, it's parents. To a great many people, it's a primary love relationship. I mean, sure, there are people who just like struggle with things like career or health or other things. But I think a lot of us, you know, when you look at our histories, like some, like I know a very few people who are like, oh, my parents were wonderful. And maybe they're liars. I don't know. But I'm going to take them at face value and say that their parents were actually precisely who they say they were. They were wonderful, responsible, together people who gently guided people and allowed them to be free, you and me and all that stuff. And I just dated myself, which is fine. Because
there's a land that I know.
Right. Free to be you and me in crazy sexy midlife love. I don't know if any of that's crazy or sexy, maybe crazy. But so how do we deal with that thing, right? So you get this knucklehead of a father. You know, my mother, you know, I've kind of cracked the code with mom. And part of was that I spent a certain amount of time looking at her behavior and going, oh, she's doing this thing to me in particular. And then at some point it became much more about, well, where does she come from? And what is the context of her own behavior? And it's not like she's merely like diabolical. I would, you know, I'm sure there's times where I would have you believe that, but really she had her own foibles in life. And nobody, you know, I think we're all very hopeful that the other person has this really great moral sense and that they only behave to that true moral sense all the time. But more often than not, most people, when you're put under pressure and you're put under difficulty, are going to make some mistakes. And sometimes those mistakes are going to be whoppers. The question for myself is, how much do I want to take a look at those whoppers and say, well, it's all about me and my pain? Or do I want to start getting into the headspace of, oh, I think we're all kind of sick children of God. And by the way, if you don't believe in God, then just say that we don't live up to what our own expectations of ourselves are, right? Because again, to sort of like find out who we are and find out all those things, those sort of like the purpose kinds of life things that I think are really important. I think we're here for a purpose, right? I think that's where we find happiness is through going out into the world and being of purpose, right? And it doesn't matter what that purpose is. I remember a friend of mine went to India years ago and spent 3 days. It sounds like an excruciating long time, but she spent 3 days with this guy who had like no possessions. But his nirvana, like his purpose for being, like he's wearing a loincloth. That's it. He's out in the street. He's in a loincloth and he has like a hoop. But the hoop is like made out of like a wire or something. So it's not even like a perfect cool hoop. It's just like some weird homemade, not circular hoop. And his nirvana was to have stray cats jump through the hoop.
And that sounds wonderful.
No, that sounds sounds ridiculous. However, if I met that person and she spent like several days with him talking about life, and it's like, yes, my purpose here is to do something that's nearly impossible. Because by the way, trying to get a stray cat, A, to come to you, and B, jump through the hoop, that's not happening.
I'm impressed.
Right. That is a certain measure of insane dedication. So I'm rooting for that guy. And I don't know if
I get that connection with another sentient being kind of a crazy cat person myself.
Right. And so you are. But here's the thing, like So on the surface level, we have this kind of like, what? That's the goal? That guy's goal is to have the stray cats jump through the hoop? And really, that's the analogy to everything. Like our lives, most of our lives are sort of like, how do we get this thing to go through the hoop? It's constantly like, yes, we can say, well, but a basketball player does that every day. Most of us aren't basketball players, but we have our own hoops that we need filling, right? We have this unusual thing that we're making happen in our daily lives, whether it be work, whether it be family, whether it be relationships, whether it be a difficult cousin, whatever that thing is, there's all these endless amounts of hoops. So this particular guy, I mean, I don't know if he would agree with what I'm just saying now. I'm just saying that he was proactive in choosing this thing, and that was his thing. And he chose to have cats jump through hoops. Makes no kind of sense to me, but what is my life? My life is a series of not so much cats jumping through hoops, but me jumping through hoops, right? Part of my life is having to kind of figure out these little particular pieces, these little components to my life, and try to make them into a meaningful thing. Right.
Let's. I want to put out our phone number. If you have a parent story or a challenge, you can call us at 888-627-6008. If you have your own parent story or challenge, the number is 888-627-6008. So Devin and I are now kind of parallel in that our fathers have passed and we have moms. I don't speak to my mom. I hear from other family members that my mother likes to announce how much she hates me. And I realized a few years ago, my mother doesn't know me because what she says about me really isn't factually true and doesn't really have anything to do with me. That has to do with her own pain and her own narrative. And even if it was stuff that I did, I'm actually not, well, first of all, it's not, but she is entitled to hate me. That's her prerogative. And so I actually do love her very much, but I love her from a safe distance because I love myself. And when I'm with her, I run an almost 100% likelihood of being abused in some way by her. And I have a responsibility to not allow that, because letting somebody else abuse me is, in my estimation, a form of self-abuse. It's not a it's not a safe and healthy relationship. So instead, I've been very, very close with my grandmother until she passed, my mom's mom. Grew up with my great grandmother, my mom's grandma. I'm still like super duper close with my mom's sister, and just not with my mom, but I wish her no ill. I mean, I love her and I wish her healing and happiness and sanity and all the best things in life. And she gets to do that with the people she chooses, just like I get to do that with the people I choose. Devin has a challenging mom, the one that I am surprisingly a lot alike, and you have a relationship with her.
Right. Am I supposed to comment on that?
Yes, you are.
I think I apply the same kinds of things around my thought process of my father to my mother. And a lot of it just comes down to, it's like, does she do things to me? And the answer is no. Actually, I think she's out attempting to give me in her unvarnished way what she wants from me, right? I don't necessarily want those things, but as the mother, she feels entitled to give that to me. And so I think for a long time, I tried to fight it. And there was this weird part where I wouldn't want her to have, and this is on me, by the way, this is 100% on me. I have a story, another story. What a shock that I would have a story for all occasions. So I remember that we would have these Thanksgivings, and that was sort of like the family obligation. If you're not coming for any other day of the year, that you come for Thanksgiving. And so I, you know, I've for the most part lived in California, so that hasn't been too much of a problem, right? And what would happen is that these Thanksgiving dinners would go on like all day long. They were these extensively long events. And it was like there were certain things that I knew that she wanted. And I was just like, well, I'm not going to do that. Because in my brain, I had decided that she didn't deserve the things that she wanted. By the way, the things that she wanted were tiny things. They were minuscule things.
Name them.
I'm going to.
Okay.
I'm getting to it. This is what storytelling is.
Oh.
We get there. We build a small amount of anticipation. And so really what she wanted that somebody appreciated the effort that she put into the meal and that the food was good. She wanted me to say, how are you? And then she wanted to just like, you know, have you ever been like seen a magician and they're like pulling out like this stream out of their mouth that just goes and goes and goes? So that is my mom's ready to do that. She's ready to pull the streamer out of her mouth just endlessly, the multicolored streamer.
Right.
She wants that. So she wants that. And then the other piece is she wants to have a sing-along. Right. She demanded that when I was a little kid, by the time I was six, I had a guitar and I was having lessons and I didn't want to play because mostly she mostly just wanted me to play the song so she could just sing whatever she wanted. Right.
How dare she?
Right. Well, listen, I play guitar and sing songs every single day. Mm-hmm. Every single day. That's sort of like if there's one thing I've got to do, I've got to sit down. It centers me, all that stuff. But at the time, as a little kid, I didn't want to be called in from outside from playing with the kids in the street, which nobody does anymore. But I did, to come in so I could accompany her, whatever, right? And it was never a song that I wanted to sing. It was always some
Stand
bizarre,
by Your Man.
Right, Stand by Your Man. Six, 7-year-old kid playing Tammy Wynette songs. So it was bizarre right from the get-go. So she'd want to have a sing-along. And not ironically, she would have people come over who were all musicians. And really, some of the musicians were really good. So we would have some really great sessions, jam sessions. But she mostly wanted me to be in it. She wanted me to be playing the Tammy Wynette song, not necessarily the other guy who was a family friend who could also play. She wanted me to be playing it and so she could sing the songs. And so we'd have these lengthy, long Thanksgivings, clearly, which is even doubly ironic that, you know, you're going to this event being completely not thankful for anything. And then at some point, she couldn't take it. And she'd say, well, aren't you going to ask me how I'm doing? Aren't you gonna say how the food was?
She's right, you know.
Right. No, I'm not even arguing. Like I said, this is totally on me. I take full responsibility for being an utter jerk. But it took a long time because initially this all seemed very on-putting to me. How do you dare demand me anything? You know, all that sort of nonsense. And really all of a sudden it occurred to me, well, why don't I just go there and say, you know what? It was really a great meal. Thank you. Thank you. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for you. And then I would say, how are you? What's going on? And then she'd pull the streamer from her mouth. And then I'd say, do you want to sing a song? Yes, I do. And she'd pull out and we'd have, you know, she'd have these books. She'd buy, this is hilarious. She'd buy me what's called a fake book. A fake book is just like a big fat book that has a million songs in it that are just sort of like the chords and the melody line and that's it.
You have a bunch of those
books. Of course I do, but she bought even more for me, but then kept them for herself.
I married your mom.
Right. It's totally ridiculous. So she has all these books. So she'd bring out the giant stack of books, but it was always like the same five or six songs. But she'd have to go through each page to find
Hallelujah.
The song.
Hallelujah.
Well, no, that Leonard came Cohen. Later. No, no, that wasn't it. It was
Stand by Your Man.
Stand by Your If You Can Read My Mind.
Oh, I haven't heard that one, but there's the Grease one. Well, there are things I could do.
An extensive tapestry of history of these songs.
I know, but I'm like the current generation. I get to participate in the sing-alongs.
Right. So what ends up happening now is like all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, there's just another way I could be framing what I perceive to be a problem. And so all of a sudden, these 7-hour, like, come over at 2 o'clock, and dinner's going to go on till 10, 11 o'clock at night. And then it was like, oh, well, what if I would just show up, thank her appropriately for dinner as dinner was taking place. When dinner was over and tea was coming out, I could say things like, oh, well, how are you? And then I'd drink my tea, and I would sit and listen for a few minutes. And then it was like, singing a long time. Okay. Let's bring out the guitar. I'm tuning up the guitar before she would be like, so I'm tuning up the guitar. So all of a sudden, she looked up after we did the three things. She looked up and said, well, I'm going to start packing you some pie and some turkey because I think I'm going to sleep.
At 9.
Not even 9. This was like 7 o'clock at night. It was like, and I showed up at 5. So this went from like a 7-hour ordeal to this very like, hey, a couple hours for Thanksgiving. It was more than reasonable. And that's what we've been doing ever since. And I think that because she has a magic word, and the magic word is, well, you did it, but under duress. You did the thing. But like you needed to be pushed into the thing.
Were you able to remove the duress and make her happy? Okay.
Totally. And I've been doing that for quite a while.
And did that ninja training make you a better relationship partner?
By far. Because all of a sudden it went from, because I think there's this line. It's like a joke line. I think I saw it on Friends once. It's not that you did the thing that I wanted you to do. It's that I wanted you to do the thing that I wanted you to do.
I wanted you to want to do the thing.
Right. Right. Exactly. So all of a sudden, I went from sort of like, okay, you've browbeat me into this thing that is just like, well, why don't I just give you what it is that you want? So what do you want? Okay, right. And so for mom, it was
thank you for the wonderful food.
Thank you. How are you? And can you play a few songs? If you look at it from that standpoint, it's like all of a sudden it's like, wow, I'm a jerk. What a colossal, like a jerk to some special beyond level that is like really like almost abnormal when you think about it like that. Now, before that, before my revelation, right, I think there was a lot of, well, but she's doing this and there's these X, Y, and Z. And really what happened was, is that I would do the things under the duress and she would resent that duress needed to be applied to make these small things take place.
Right.
And so she behaved in ways that weren't all that nice. So what's happened is, so how are you? Perfect. Ironically, I mean, you know, now that COVID's here, I call my mother every day or two. Because I think it's important to just check up on her. And then while I'm there, it's like, hey, what's going on? And talk about it. And then I have a conversation with her. And then at some point, she's like, okay, I'm done. And she says that, by the way, which is hilarious. Okay, I had my say. Bye. She doesn't even need to ask about me because that's fine. I mean, she does. She wants to know. But so once I started applying these kinds of things to just sort of like people in my world, people in my life. Actually, I had a guy that I don't know really well today wrote me and said, out of the blue, I love you. This is not a romantic thing. This is...
In case I was worried?
Right, no. Yeah, that's... So he wrote this, and it was basically... Because we've been having this ongoing conversation. He's had some health issues. And so, you know, once in a while, I'll say, dude, what's going on? How are you? And we talk about it for a few minutes, and I know what's going on with him. And he's a great guy. And he got good news today regarding his sort of like the procedures and things that he needed to get better health is, you know, that's moving forward. So, I mean, I think that's what it is. It's like, how do we take the duress out of other people's lives? Mm. And it's a two-way street. It's not literally like this one person, like I just give. But what ends up happening is the more you remove the duress from somebody else's experience, the more likely you're going to get reciprocity, which ultimately I think is the goal. In other words, I'm going to do a little for you. You're going to do a little for me. And hopefully we'll go skip tra-la-la off into the sunset.
And one of the points that I wanted to touch on, because we're coming really close to the end of the show, is so you're in contact with your mom, who, by the way, I adore.
Right.
And the reason I adore her is she adores you. She loves you. We have phone conversations entirely about how charming and talented and brilliant and handsome you are. And
well,
those are
that's all right.
Really? And we have a lot of those conversations.
I'll dial the number for you.
My mom, I can't have that relationship with me because she does not wish me well. So it is safer for me to just give her space and respect her wishes.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, that's also sometimes the thing. I mean, I remember I'm going to give a very, very brief story. I remember being broken up with. And I remember like at the end of it, like, okay, we're breaking up and I hate this idea and you hurt my feelings. And she got up, like literally she's wheeling out her suitcase. She's like, can I have a hug?
And oh, this was your fiance.
Previous.
8 months before I showed up.
Right. And so I just remember hearing a friend of mine say, if you love somebody, you want that they get the thing that they want, even if that thing isn't you. Mm. And that really sort of stuck with me as a meaningful thing. Because what is love? If I'm rooting for you, I'm rooting for you, right? And that's it. And so, I mean, I think you take that logic and you kind of, I think that's what sort of saved the relationship. And here's one other thing. Like, there have been times where I didn't talk to my mother. And then what would happen is the behaviors that I didn't like about her started showing up in other people, which is an amazing sort of thing. And so there was like a conclusion that I came to, which was, okay, I need to really start thinking about, well, what is this? In other words, apparently I might as well get the familiar part that's a drag rather than something else.
We have 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
We didn't really have time to jump into one thing I wanted to cover, which is that our parents make some terrible choices so we don't have to. My mom and stepfather were into a lot of really chaotic, druggy, polyamorous 1970s behavior so that I could see the chaos, so that I never had to go down that route. They made the mistake for me. Your parents married like
a whole bunch of times. Right. I'm with you.
And not to each other so that we don't have to.
Right.
You know, and I feel grateful that they went through it so that I don't have to, you know, so that's just another way that we get to use our experiences that may not have been so great at the time for our benefit.
Yeah.
So I think we're coming down to the wire.
Do we have a guest next time?
We have. I believe we have Jen Poulsen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know.
All right. I know Jen Poulsen.
Yes,
she's
you do.
Great.
She is. So that I believe is our guest next week. This has been another episode of Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, because grown-up love is better. Because we've done all of the really stupid things already, so we don't have to anymore. And be sure to head on over to crazysexymidlifelove.com and watch the video of our first 11 weddings in 3 minutes. And while you're there, download Devin's amazing ebook. Women, if you want to know how to get what you want from men, download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets every marriage-minded woman needs to know. And thank you for joining us. And we will see you at 5 p.m. Pacific time next Wednesday and every Wednesday. Mwah!
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.